as promised. Nobody better than this guy. We're joined right now by a Yahoo Sports columnist. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is co-host of the Yahoo Sports College podcast. He is a Busch Light enthusiast. Friend of the program, he is Dan Wetzel. Dan, what's going on? How are you?
Good, Rome. How you been?
Good, dude. Good. Great to have you back. Thanks for doing this. A couple of things to cover with you, Dan. Let me start first with Trevor Lawrence. What was your initial reaction to last night's news that he had tested positive for COVID?
Well, you know, you hope he's fine, right? And, you know, there's so many of these cases, and we see so many athletes that turn out to be fine that you almost forget that, you know, there's going to be somebody who it doesn't work out as well for. So that's the first thing. The other is it's really just inevitable. I mean, we've said it all along. College football is the hardest sport to try to do this during a pandemic. These guys are around other college kids. Colleges are built to be communal. They're built so people interact. And, you know, there's only so much of a bubble you can put a young person in. He can't just go back to a 30,000-square-foot mansion like Tom Brady can and only be around his family. So it's a little bit inevitable. And then you really look and say, all right, they can beat BC this weekend. They can probably beat Notre Dame next weekend, but will Trevor Lawrence be there for next weekend's Notre Dame game, which is a, you know, top five matchup in a year when we haven't had many and don't appear to have a whole lot during the regular season. So what's up with the Notre Dame game?
Dan Wetzel joining us. You know, you lay that out exactly as I would expect. His health, both short-term and long-term, obviously is the most important thing. Now, as you understand the ACC's COVID protocols, I mean, finish that point if you would. What is the timeline like for his return to the field, and can it happen in time for the Notre Dame game? Where does that stand?
So this is what it appears to be, but there is a little wiggle room. No one's really boxing themselves in. 10 days starting the day you get your test or you have symptoms. Now, he can go back and say, oh, I had symptoms on Monday, and restart the clock. I don't know what's exactly going on. We don't have an answer on that. He says he has, you know, relatively mild is how he described it. But he did test positive on Wednesday. 10 days from Wednesday, if you count Wednesday, is next Friday, the night before the Notre Dame game. Now, there is an 11th day where you have to have no fever, and then team doctors have to clear you. What's uncertain is, do you have to wait that entire day? Or once you don't have a fever in the morning, are you then clear? We don't exactly know right now. At least I don't. Maybe someone else does. There's also this. Trevor Lawrence wouldn't presumably be able to fly with the team on that Friday. How does he get to South Bend? Okay, you say, hey, fire up a booster's jet. That's not how the NCAA works. At least, you know, in normal times. I mean, does he have to, like, drive up there and stay at the Motel 6 off the highway by himself and then show up at the game? He would have no practice. There's all sorts of, like, these quirky little things that will make it probably pretty interesting as this sorts out. But if he gets through this fine, I do think there's a high probability that however this is going to work, Trevor Lawrence will be on the field in South Bend next Saturday night.
We are talking to Dan Wetzel. All right, Dan, obviously COVID has been the biggest story of the year, both in sports and outside of it. You also have a great piece up right now about the Big Ten and Nebraska. Now, Wisconsin's COVID totals approach the numbers where the conference would step in and mandate that the game would be called off. Wisconsin made that decision on their own. Did Nebraska feel like Wisconsin was trying to avoid playing the game without Graham Mertz and their head coach, Paul Christ?
I don't know specifically what Nebraska football thinks. I think there was a feeling around the Big Ten amongst other people that, hey, this is kind of convenient. We're just going to call this game before we have to. Now, in the ensuing days, it was sort of inevitable there'd be more tests positive, so it would have been canceled anyway. But let's just call this thing now because, look, we're not going to have our head coach, or we're going to be basically on what we entered the summer as our fourth-string quarterback. So there's that suspicion. Whether it's true or not, I don't, you know, who knows? But that's how football coaches are. They're very suspicious people. So there was a little bit of that. But inevitably, it was going to get canceled. You know, once there's six positives on a team, there's going to be a seventh. That's just the way this virus works.
So Nebraska gets the news, Dan, about Wisconsin, and then they negotiate a deal with Tennessee Chattanooga as a last-minute replacement. How did that idea go down with the rest of the Big Ten?
Well, at the top level of the presidents and trustee level and all that, not well at all. And that's sort of the ongoing issue with Nebraska and the Big Ten. Let me be clear. I don't think it's an unreasonable idea of saying, hey, look, we're healthy to play. We want to play. It's not our fault Wisconsin has an outbreak. We also have no idea when we're going to get our outbreak. The season's already short. Like, let's get as many games in as possible. I think that's a perfectly reasonable concept for a college football team to try to do and say, hey, let's play Chattanooga. Let's not just waste this Saturday. The issue isn't so much what I think or what Nebraska thinks. It's what the Big Ten presidents are going to think. And if you know anything about these guys, these men and women, there's no way they were going to approve that. They had just set up the rules a month ago to finally say, all right, we are going to give this a try. And there was a lot of hesitancy, obviously. We will only play conference teams. And if a game is not able to be played, it will be a no-contest cancellation. These are the rules. If you know anything about the Big Ten, they care a great deal about that type of stuff, about group dynamics, group decision-making, and erring on the side of the health and safety and all those things. So it's not so much that Nebraska had this idea and asked. It's who they asked. There was simply no chance. And so when this thing came up to the Big Ten presidents on a conference call on Thursday, other than Nebraska, I mean, there just was no support. And there was never going to be any support. So it's like, why are you even trying with this? And then there's a feeling of, well, the rest of the league looks at it and says, Nebraska's just grandstanding here. They're coming up with something they know won't pass. And they're just doing it so they can put out, hey, we tried harder than everybody else. We care more about football. And so there's just this disconnect between the Big Ten and Nebraska. And it's not that either side is inherently wrong. I don't think Nebraska's view of how to do this is wrong. Or you could just simply say, that's just a stupid idea. I don't think it is. Nor can I think you look at the Big Ten and say, well, you guys all agreed upon these rules and this is how we're doing. That's not necessarily a bad idea either. It's just the mentality of the two places just don't always fit the way the other schools fit into the Big Ten, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. It's actually pretty brilliant, Dan Wetzel, the way you laid that out. So what does it tell us? I mean, what does the whole sequence tell you about the relationship between Nebraska and the Big Ten?
I mean, they just don't get along. I mean, you have a lot of people going, oh, of course it was Nebraska who 1 month into this is already trying to change the rules. We all agreed on this last month. Now you want to do something different. And it's Nebraska sitting there saying, hey, you guys got to start thinking outside the box. We got to play football games. You don't understand how much it matters here in Nebraska. So they just don't get along. It's like a bad marriage. The problem is, one source inside the league said, no one knows how to get divorced, and no one really can. They can't afford it. Nobody can afford it. Nothing is going to change. It's not like Nebraska is going to leave the Big Ten. And it's not like the Big Ten is going to kick Nebraska out because they made them consider a proposal for 5 minutes on a conference call. It's not that big of a deal, but it just shows that, you know, Nebraska jumped to the Big Ten because they thought the Big 12 was going to fall apart. They were tired of Texas seemingly running the show there, and there was a lot more money in the Big Ten. And it was a marriage of a little bit of desperation and you marry for money. That doesn't usually work out into the most happy of nuptials. And the Big Ten was like, hey, we need to grab someone so we can create a conference title game. We have 11 teams. Let's take Nebraska. This ought to work. But there's just a different mentality than when other schools entered the league. Even Maryland and Rutgers, who don't really fit, just sort of go along to get along. And when Penn State entered the league as the 11th, they fit like a glove. It was a perfect mesh. It's almost hard to imagine Penn State wasn't once in the Big Ten. Like, they just fit. Nebraska just hasn't gotten that. So whether that changes, whether that develops, which way it goes to it, but right now these two places don't really get along. But what's Nebraska going to do? Even if they could go back to the Big 12, why would you? You're making so much more money playing in the Big 10, even if you've lost sort of a little bit of that edge of getting recruiting to the Texas high schools and things like that.
Dan Wetzel, my guest. I'm not really sure how this works out, but if you're in a bad marriage, Dan, and then you end up sleeping in separate rooms, can you ultimately get back in the same room? I don't know. I don't know how that plays out, but
I don't know, but it's a football. I mean, things change, right? I mean, it's still just football. When someone's paying you $55 million a year to be there, you know, your solo bedroom doesn't seem too bad.
Sorry to Dan Wetzel. Listen, so what about the bigger conversation when it comes to Nebraska and football? I mean, they were a powerhouse for decades. A lot has changed since the glory days. Scott Frost, for instance, had great success at UCF. But if he can't lead them back to prominence, can anybody?
I mean, that's the big question. So, you know, Nebraska had a lot of historical advantages, bigger budgets, you know, a huge fan base. Obviously, Tom Osborne is a tremendous coach. You know, there was a period of time when so many schools wouldn't accept a running quarterback, particularly an African-American quarterback. They did a great job with that kind of concept. I mean, they've had a million advantages, right? It's a great place to play. But that kind of ended in the 90s, and it's a different ballgame now. And even through their Big 12 membership, they're playing four teams a year down the state of Texas. They're getting a lot of recruits from Texas. They were a little bit more of a national program. When they got to the Big 10, if you go in, they're a long way from the Big Ten's basically recruiting base, which is Chicago, Ohio, and Detroit, and Western Pennsylvania, and stuff like that. It's hard to get those kids to literally drive by all the other schools, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ohio State, all these schools to go all the way out to Nebraska. They're way out on the edge. They have not done as well recruiting. They haven't quite hired the right coach. Scott Frost has done better in recruiting, and we will see. But now in his third year, we have not seen anything on the field that resembles progress. Does that change this year now that they've gotten Ohio State out of the way and they're apparently not going to play Wisconsin? Perhaps. But so far, we haven't seen that jump from Scott Frost that you would have liked to have seen in year two. Again, maybe they got blown out by Ohio State, but that happened. Maybe we will see it going forward. But clearly, if he can't make it work, you wonder, you know, what's the cap, what's the limit of Nebraska football? But I'm certainly willing to give Scott Frost more time to figure that out, because he inherited a pretty mediocre roster, and it's going to take some work. But he's had some decent recruiting classes, just hasn't shown on the field.
Spending time with Dan Wetzel. Dan, one last thought, if you don't mind. I got to get your thoughts on Lane Kiffin. So he retweets that fan who was raging about that missed call in the Auburn game. He gets fined $25,000 for it. He threatens to pay the fine in pennies. Although his math was off, how good is it to have Lane back in the SEC?
Oh, yeah. I mean, All-American trolling, right? You can question his math skills, because he said, that, you know, I have a $25,000 fine. Does anyone have 25,000 pennies?
Right.
Well, yeah, that's not how it works. You need $2.5 million, but that's all right. Here's the thing. They're 1-4, and everyone's talking about Ole Miss in great ways, right? They're funny. They're in the news. Their fan base is actually pretty, like, laughing right along with it all. It's genius. He is as good at social media and all these things as any coach in the country. He just creates these kind of fun scenarios. And, you know, hey, it's his $25,000, which, you know, isn't fun, but you know, why would you retweet a fan going off on the officials, even if the officials deserved it? You know, well, you know, a couple of years ago, he did a tweet with, he showed like some picture of like three refs all wearing blindfolds and canes. You know, like this is what he does. And then he just keeps perpetuating it and pushing and prodding and trolling every little bit. He has a lot of fun with it. But to create this much kind of positive, I don't know what it would be, emotion or reactions and fun in a year where you are rebuilding and not winning, is just genius stuff from Lane. It's great to have him back.
He is a Yahoo Sports columnist, a New York Times bestselling author, a co-host of the Yahoo Sports College podcast, friend of the program, and he is, in fact, a Busch Light enthusiast. No one better. Dan Wetzel. Dan, appreciate it, man. Great job, as always. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Rome. Take care.
You're the best. I mean that sincerely. That I say it when he comes on, and I mean it sincerely. That probably, if he's not the best columnist in the country, he absolutely is the most versatile sports columnist in the country. That guy literally writes the hell out of anything and everything. I've got a lot of respect for Dan Wetzel.